I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Chris Moore.
And we started the Homos on Haunted Hill so that we can throw a party. A horror film party. It'll be quite amusing.
There'll be madmen and chainsaws and ghosts and perhaps even a few murders. You're all invited. So this is not a question. This is a statement. By the phenomenal Drew Barrymore. Whenever you get the chance to go out in the rain and have sex with your friend's father, do not miss the opportunity.
Did she really say this?
She did, yeah.
Oh my god.
Remember that video that she posted of herself in the rain? Like, oh my god, I'm in the rain. Do not miss the opportunity.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I quote that on a daily basis. No one knows what I'm talking about. But it makes me happy because she seems so happy. And like, happy, maybe a little mentally disturbed. Like, she looks like she's having a psychotic break, but like a fun one.
Well, yeah.
You know, where she's like, I've lost it. I've lost touch with reality, but I'm in a better place, you know?
Was reality really that great anyway?
It wasn't. It really wasn't.
No.
And, you know, Drew Barrymore, you know, she's got some flaws, but, you know, I really respect her for the fact that she is like the one shot child star who went through absolute hell and is, I mean, I don't want to say completely sane, you know, because she's like a little crazy in like a fun way, like a kooky way.
Yeah.
But she seems to like, she hasn't really hurt anyone intentionally, you know, like she seems fairly grounded for a child star who did coke when she was like six.
Yeah. I mean, the same as Sarah Gilbert. It's like, maybe doing this movie just, I don't know, bonded them for life, and they ended up
becoming
normal people, you know?
That's exactly what this was.
This very normal domestic drama that we're talking about today.
This movie does bring people together. It does.
Yeah.
That was the intention. It's a healing film. Because there's so many rain scenes. I felt so cleansed while I was watching this. I was like, I bet they were so clean on this movie.
Yeah.
They're always in the rain. And it takes place in L.A. How often does it rain in L.A.? You know? Like, this is a very special film. There's so much rain.
Mm-hmm.
I love rain scenes. They're so calming. I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But I can't because there's so much intrigue in the story.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, this was the year of the erotic thriller, right? 92 here.
Oh, so many people were banging and getting in trouble for it.
We got Sharon Stone over there.
Oh, just being a goddess.
Yeah, yeah. You hand the rocks the cradle, you know, single white female. It was just the golden age, right?
We were so spoiled and we didn't even know it.
Yeah, no.
Imagine all of those movies being released like this year. We would lose our minds.
Wow. Yeah.
We couldn't handle it.
Even one of them, people would just go crazy, you know. Which is why I'm glad that like Gen Zers and Gen Alpha whatever people have not discovered movies made before like 2010 yet, because they're gonna lose their shit.
This is problematic. These characters are very young, and the father is very old, and I feel like this is just sending all kinds of mixed signals to young people. Like, it's funny how we watch these movies and we never thought, like, I'm gonna go fuck my friend's father. Like, somehow we resisted the urge, but you know,
yeah
like, I'm not gonna beat a dog to death with a baseball bat. I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna refrain from that kind of behavior. I don't know.
You didn't see women going and fucking their friends' husbands and just ruining people's lives, or you know, it just
a few of them.
It didn't happen. Just a couple. I mean, and you know, variety, really. You know,
it's the spice of life.
I know. What is it? Historians usually say because women were like entering the workforce in droves in the late 80s that there was this sort of backlash, I guess, which I don't know if I totally buy that, but that's the idea behind some of these movies being made at this time period. But
yeah, I
who
think
can say?
A lot of people think they were trying to scare men, you know, look how much power women actually have when they're given the opportunity to, you know, go out there and fend for themselves. You know, I think there's certain men that were like, oh no, this is very scary. I mean, certainly like Fatal Attraction was the one that scared men so badly that, you know, they kept their dicks to themselves for a little while, I think.
Which, isn't that a good thing, folks?
Sometimes it is. I mean, some of y'all really need to, you know, you don't need to think with your dicks as much as you sometimes do.
Exactly.
People have feelings and they will not be ignored, Dan. Oh my God. How dare they?
Ugh. Yeah, it's interesting that movie was like, it was a hit there in 87, but then it took a couple years for these other ones to really, you know, come to the surface here.
Yeah, that is funny. I guess they were trying to find the right formula to sort of make them work. I don't know. They were like, okay, so we need some sort of domestic drama where someone comes in, some interloper, some sexy lady interloper,
who
has a taste for dick and vengeance.
Right. And like, as we said before, you know, these women are a little problematic, but they come into a family unit that is already even more problematic, arguably.
Yeah.
And, especially this family in this movie, you know, not.
I forgot that Sylvie is sending her dad's like TV station bomb threats. I was like, that's a little extreme. Like this doesn't seem like the best family dynamic. And the mom's like off in her own little like wing of the house, slowly dying from emphysema and dressing like Blanche Dubois, and like I'm just like, what is going on in this movie? It's really great.
Yeah, played by Cheryl Ladd, perfect casting here. It's great. Yeah,
one of Charlie's favorite angels.
Exactly, and same with Drew Barrymore later on.
Look at these connections we're making already. I wonder Cheryl at some point was like, you know, Drew, what you should really do is in like 10 years, you should reboot Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels.
And she thought on that and was like, "Ah, oh, good idea, Cheryl."
Yeah.
And then it happened.
You definitely feel a lot of the like Lifetime DNA in this one. Oh, like God, how many movies, you know, came about just because of like this movie and, you know, some of the other ones that came out that year. Yeah.
This one definitely feels, I mean, I guess you can say Fatal Attraction, Hand That Rocks the Cradle, stuff like that are Lifetime adjacent. You can feel that
adjacent
DNA in there.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I think you can really feel it. It feels a few slight cuts, and this could easily play on Lifetime on a Sunday afternoon. I mean, it just, it does have that feeling, albeit it's a lot more stylish than a lot of the Lifetime movies because they shoot most of the Lifetime movies in about 4 days. So they don't really have time for stuff like style. They're like, let's get it done.
Yeah.
This movie is very kind of arty. It has like a very arty look. It's very lots of slow motion and, you know,
like not as surreal as like David Lynch, but like sort of at times I get kind of a Lynchian vibe. I don't know.
It's definitely got an interesting style. I think Kat Shea brings a lot to this. Just the way it looks, the way it feels. It's very moody and kind of dreamy, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, totally. You just watched that documentary about erotic thrillers, right? Too, that came out.
We Kill for Love.
How was that?
Very good. It does touch on a lot of the mainstream ones, like James Dearden, who wrote Fatal Attraction, is interviewed, and he talks about the process. And so there's a lot of the mainstream ones that are talked about, but then there's a lot of the stuff that was on, you know, Cinemax late at night, and the stuff that was more direct to video. And so they really discuss the whole thing, why it kind of died out. A lot of people are like, well, internet porn, you know, made it a little bit less exciting. Stuff like that, and just the quality of the movies that were being made kind of at the end of the run, like late 90s, early 2000s, were kind of not so great. you know? So I think they lost a lot of the production value. And it's a really interesting documentary. It's about 3 hours altogether, I think, or maybe 2.5. I can't remember. It just flies by. It's so great.
Right.
And they've got, like, you know, Andrew Stevens on there talking about it. And, like, it's great. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Nice. You have to check that out. Was it Vinegar Syndrome?
Vinegar Syndrome. It's either them or one of their partner labels, but you can get it on their site.
Buy it through them, yeah.
It's also, I think it's streaming on Amazon as like a rental or a purchase.
Okay.
So if you're more in the digital era, you can get it there. But it's definitely worth a watch if you're into these kinds of movies. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we live in such a like a sexless world now when it comes to cinema that it's always interesting going back and watching. And there's, you know, problematic stuff. I mean, particularly in this movie, because I'm pretty sure she was underage. Like, we talked about the crush and but just in general with stuff like Fatal Attraction, like, you know, that just the amount of sex in that movie is just insane compared to movies today, because everyone's afraid to do it today, you know. They'll get canceled because somebody will complain, and I don't get it. Sex is part of life, you know. It's like if movies are supposed to, you know, portray the entirety of, you know, the human existence, it's like, well, that's, if you're not showing that, that's a pretty big part of the human existence that you're, you know, omitting from these movies. But
I mean, it's so funny that we all came into this world because some people decided to have sex, and then, you know, like, we don't talk about that. It's like forbidden,
right?
It always has cracked me up. I'm like, why is this so forbidden to talk about when, you know, it's just, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
People are so stuffy.
It's weird.
I mean, that movie Poor Things, I guess it's streaming now. So unfortunately, more people are seeing it, the wrong kinds of people. And I saw some, saw some pretty hot takes on Twitter or X or whatever the fuck it is, about how it's like the most misogynistic film of all time. I'm like, okay, y'all need to calm down, because it's not. It's about a woman learning to trust herself and her body throughout the course of the movie. And I consider it a very feminist film, but we have these people. Yeah, they're like, how dare they? Emma Stone is nude in the movie and she's having sex. How dare she? Like, they need to just calm down.
I can't. Who was it? Even Henry Cavill came out and was like, oh, yeah, sex in movies is bad. And I'm like, well, this coming from the guy who's like the most AI-generated porn star at this point.
It's like, Henry, you do realize nobody goes to see your films for your acting.
Your acting ability.
I mean, no offense here, but like, let's just get real, okay? You're very attractive, and that's all they care about. If you had more sex scenes in your films, your movies would probably make more money.
Okay. Right,
so like, he's the kind of actor that should have been in like Cinemax After Dark shit back in the day. Like that. That's really his calling. And for some reason, you know, since we don't have those movies now, he's got nowhere to go, but in superhero films or Hellraiser direct to video sequels.
Right.
Which they don't even make those in anymore. So like, he's got nowhere to go but into smut. Sharon Tate in Valley of the Dolls. Like, all I really know how to do is take off my clothes. It's like, that's all you know how to do, Henry. Just embrace it. We will love you for it. Yeah, that's enough. That is absolutely enough. You are enough, Henry. Just be yourself. Your beautiful naked self. We will embrace you. It'll be great.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there's still a thirst for this stuff, but I don't know that. I think people are a little afraid to go see it, this kind of thing, in theaters. Like, I'm thinking about Saltburn and how like it bombed in theaters, but then was a huge hit on streaming. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it seems like there's still a want for these kind of movies. It's just like, I don't know, people want to see them in theaters with their mom and dad, you know. Even
so
at the time
too.
I don't know, people, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I when some young kid on social media complains about, you know, having to watch a sex scene with their parents, I totally get it. I remember mm-hmm. back in the day, if we were watching a movie as a family and a scene like that came on, everyone got really tense. I think it's stupid. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it just it is a thing. However, yeah. to say like these movies should not be made at all because I can't watch them with my family. Why are you watching every movie with your family? What is
right,
that?
Exactly.
Not every movie yeah. is chitty chitty bang bang, okay?
Right.
Some of them
right.
are chitty chitty gang bang. And you don't need to watch that with your family. Like,
did you just come up with that? That's pretty good.
I don't think so. I've heard it somewhere, but I'm sure it's somewhere. A movie. It's got to be. I don't know. If not, it's a missed opportunity somewhere. Yeah. But it's like you don't need to watch everything with your family. You just don't.
Yeah. No,
I wouldn't even want to watch this with my family. And it's fairly tame when we really stop and think about it.
Yeah, relatively. Did you watch the version that had the added
yes.
scenes back in?
Of course I watched the unrated version.
Of course. Yes.
The only way to watch an erotic thriller.
Right.
Although,
and you can always tell because they're kind of blurry. But
I watched the Blu-ray version and you could tell they I guess it was like a VHS or Laserdisc mm-hmm. rip that they put in there. It's kind of like the Silent Night, Deadly Night uncut stuff. Like you can tell it's from a source that's not a film source.
Right, right.
And I don't know if it added that much. It's like there's like one little extra kiss between the two main leads, and then there's some extra Tom Skerritt, Drew Barrymore piano banging.
Yeah, banging,
That's about it. It's not really...
Yeah.
It's nothing to write home about or call 1 million moms about. You know, you can't...
There's like the extra 5 seconds of her like running from the hospital or whatever at the end.
Like this is random.
Like, do I need that? Do I need this? I don't like, why was this cut to begin with? I don't
like this movie would be perfect if we just got rid of those 2 shots of her running in mm-hmm. the hospital. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's dragging us down. It's like, it's 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't think it improved or hurt the film. It's
really
random. Like, why is this cut? So silly.
I can see how this has become kind of a lesbian cult classic of
sorts, totally
the relationship. First of all, for one thing, Sarah Gilbert, who came out, of course, as a lesbian in 2010, and I think she's come out and said that like this was the first same-sex kiss that she had was on this movie. But yeah, it's just dripping with lesbian energy here, and
it's like even Sylvie's like at some point like I'm not a lesbian. Or maybe I am. I don't know.
Maybe I am. I don't know. Who can say, really?
I mean, she certainly dresses like a potential lesbian. She has lesbian interests, you know. Mm-hmm, she's never seen, like, getting chummy with a dude in the film. So I feel like there's some subtext.
This was 92. You had to live with subtext here.
Yeah. It's definitely there, though. It's definitely bubbling to the surface.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I don't know. People are just way too puritanical about this stuff.
Absolutely.
These days. And we don't even have a Hollywood motion picture code anymore. And it seems like people want to go back to that to some degree, this weird moral thing. And the repression is just, it's terrible. Mm. Yeah.
It's like, I think they do want to go back to that code. They want to go back to the Hays code where if a character is bad, they must be punished by the end of it or else the world will explode because someone in the audience might think that the filmmakers are trying to say they're a good person and that's the way to live your mm-hmm. life. God forbid. You know, it's like, y'all just look for the moral gray areas. That's what life is.
Right.
Not everything has to be all tied up in a little bow at the end.
No. And there are some great performances sometimes. Like, even back to Saltburn, it's like mm-hmm. Saltburn, Barry Keoghan, that performance is great, and yet he was not recognized for like anything because it was, like you said, that the role is so like problematic that like nobody, I don't think, wants to recognize him because of the role, and that's unfortunate.
It is a very brave performance, and this guy's going to be around for a while. I really like this guy a lot.
I think so.
I think he's
great. I like him a lot too, yeah.
And I mean, just there's stuff that he does in this where I'm just like, oh my God, this guy is just going in all the way, and it's exciting to watch that, to watch someone so uninhibited, especially in this day and age. I mean, most people that would have read that script would have been like, oh, I'm going to be eating someone out who has their period. I'm going to be smeared with blood and I'm going to be licking a cummy bath drain.
fucking a gravestone?
Which was apparently his idea, so I guess that wasn't in the script, but clearly he embraced what was the spirit of the script and added a little improvisation that felt right at home.
right.
I think it's great. I think it's good for him.
Good for him. Yeah.
More actors like that, just being weird.
More actors, like more movies like that. Just give me more at this point. It's
the success of Saltburn does make me wonder, because there's clearly an appetite for this. It's just, as you said, they don't want to see it with their families in a theater. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to see it at home when they're alone in the dark. And you know, that's fine. Maybe they can just be, because when I think of these movies, I didn't see these in the theater. I saw them at home on TV late at night, or rented them, and I watched them basically alone, because I knew, like, oh, this one looks like, you know, you could tell from the cover. If there were two people embracing in kind of a steamy way, you're like, okay, I don't need to watch this with my mom and dad. Like, this is something I need to watch alone with my headphones on. Late at night, I don't want them to come in and be like, what are you watching? What is this smut? You know? So there are some movies that are, I think they're fun because you kind of have to hide them a bit more, and they're more secretive, and that's kind of exciting, you know?
For sure.
They're naughty.
Just a little naughty.
It's a naughty movie.
Starring America's sweetheart, Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, I guess. Well, she wasn't really much of a sweetheart at this point, right? She had just get out of rehab, and she'd had a rough time for a few years.
It'd been a rough time. Yeah, she did. You know, E.T. kicked her off, and then she did Firestarter and a couple Cat's Eye and a couple other things.
Irreconcilable Differences, and lots of good performances there, and then just. That cocaine can harm a child's brain.
It'll get you.
All that booze and coke.
And all that booze.
Not good for a 8-year-old.
No, who knew? We just didn't know at the time. The studies had not been published yet. It was a different era. We just didn't know.
They used to hand out coke to all the elementary school kids at Christmas. We didn't know better. We've come a long way.
That's that line that Brittany Murphy has in Clueless. She's like, you guys got coke here? And they're like, yeah, this is a really nice school.
See, it was a different time. We did not know. But we learned and we grew. Nancy Reagan said no. And we thought, okay, Nancy. She said, up with hope, down with dope. And we were like, yes. Yas, queen.
God.
Blowjob queen, Nancy Reagan. Throat goat.
Oh, wow.
Where was her erotic thriller?
Yeah, I don't know what the closest thing we came to that was. I don't even know.
Nancy Reagan in her red suit, spreading those legs. Uh-oh. Making trouble.
Brie Van de Kamp. I don't know. That might be the closest thing we came to a Nancy Reagan thing. I don't know.
Maybe so.
20 years old this year, by the way, folks.
Oh, God.
Desperado is crazy.
I know. That fucking makes nuts. Me want to crawl on under a rock and just never come back out.
Fucking crazy.
Mary Alice Young shot herself 20 years ago.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I guess it'll be 20 years ago, like in August or September.
Yeah, probably August or September probably. Yeah.
God.
Yeah, nuts.
That is so sad.
Yeah, I know.
It's just
you posted that thing on Facebook about how, like, you know, it's so much of adulthood is just realizing, like, oh, that's like 20 years old, or that's 30 years old, or that's wow.
It's like, okay, it's so sobering to know this.
Yeah,
like,
just, I mean,
it's like some days
for the longest time
fine.
I was like, for the longest time I'm like, oh, the 90s, that's like not that long ago, but now it's like we're as far away from the 90s as we were from like the 60s in the 90s, and I'm like, this is just sense. What is this? How did we get here?
I don't understand it. Like, it really does not seem that long ago.
No. Like, I remember, you know, watching Psycho as a kid and being like, oh my gosh, this is this brilliant classic, and but it's old, but it's really classic. But yeah. Then that's like, do people watch Scream like now and think that? Because that's like how far we are away from Scream at this point. It's crazy.
Isn't that funny? I think that's just wild.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Even this one, this is a, what, 32 now?
Yeah, this crazy movie is like as old as like Betty Davis movies were when I was a kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Drew Barrymore is our Betty Davis.
Basically.
Classic star, Betty Davis. Drew Barrymore is my successor.
Oh, good stuff here. All right, so like we said, 1992, the year of the erotic thriller. Set the scene. Picture it. Lots of boobs. Lots of, you know.
Yeah, lots of
fucking
steam.
Up family units. And, yeah, lots of steam. Lots of, yeah.
Lots
punching
of...
Punching people in the face.
Curtains billowing in the wind in slow motion.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, yes.
That was a common
especially
theme.
This movie, a lot of billowy curtains, for sure.
They're always leaving those windows open.
Lots of nightgowns and
frilly nightgowns blowing in the wind. Let's bring that back. That was a good look. It's a good look. Yeah. I like it a lot.
I think so. Yeah, bring it back. What else? So producers Melissa Goddard and Peter Morgan brought the original idea to our dear New Line Studios here. New Line Pictures, I should say. New Line Pictures. The studio then hired Kat Shea, who had made a number of Roger Corman movies. The idea was they wanted a teenage fatal attraction. I guess initially that was what they were aiming for here, which they got a few years later with Swim Fan. So just you wait.
Oh. And Fear. Don't forget Fear.
And Fear, which we haven't covered Fear yet either. We should do that at some point. Yeah, that's a good one.
Let me in the house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. But the dog stuff in that one almost makes
it
unwatchable.
Oh, God. It's terrible.
Yeah, but
that son of a bitch.
I'm glad the dog was fine in this one. You know, he was just being cute and, you know.
I mean, well, there was the dog that died at the beginning, but we never got to meet him. So.
Oh, yeah.
Him
yeah,
or her
Yeah.
Got hit by the car.
And she did put him out of his misery, which for how bad he looked, I guess that was for the best. But
fairly brutal way.
Yeah. I blocked it, Chris. Why,
I'm
why
sorry.
Remember, why
I'm
make
sorry.
Me remember?
Remember, Kevin.
Remember, Winnie, remember. So the film developed greatly from that premise. There were three different drafts of the script and four different endings. Four different endings. Wow.
Oh, could have had a little clue situation going on there.
Yeah.
It could have ended like this or like that. Cheryl Ladd comes back as a ghost and like is all like, get away from my daughter. I don't know why she's British all of a sudden. I guess get away from her.
I mean, why not?
Why? I don't know. It's more dramatic that way.
And one of them is like Sylvie and Ivy drive off into the sunset and live their Thelma and Louise fantasy, you know,
their lesbian lifestyle, love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why not? Mm-hmm. That's the ending that like 2024 deserves. They couldn't have handled it then.
Yeah. According to Kat Shea, the original ending had Ivy getting away with her crimes and hitchhiking along a road. However, New Line insisted that Ivy be punished, which was a thing from this era, right? Because women who do bad things, they have to be punished here.
Oh, that's a bummer.
You'd think New Line would be more open to something like that. You know, they were making all these crazy, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street movies and stuff at this time.
Yeah, they were a little more open-minded, a little more fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a little bit of a prudish streak there all of a sudden from old New Line.
Yeah, yeah. But then New Line wanted to revive the character for sequels, which the director refused to do. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot there, really, by, you know, killing off this character and then having to create new characters. which I've never seen any of the sequels, I don't think. Like, maybe, like, bits and pieces on TV, but I don't think I've seen any of the...
I almost made it through the second one. I came very close.
Is that with Alyssa Milano?
Yeah. It is not good. I've heard the next one is just as not good. And so I've got the box set. Maybe I'll watch them at some point, but the second one did not do much for me. So I was like, oh, I bet it's just going to be downhill from here. But then again, there was Children of the Corn 2, which was eh. And then there's Children of the Corn 3, which is brilliant. So maybe you never know. It could happen. I think Jamie Presley is in the third one, which interests me.
Yeah, that sounds right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like her a lot.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? This was nominated for a grand jury prize at the Sundance Festival in 1992.
My, how far we've come.
I know.
This was like, really? This was nominated?
Yeah, apparently.
These days it's like just like the sort of cold, thoughtful meditations on life that get those kinds of attention. Oh, it's a shame.
Yeah, it's true. Didn't do very well at the box office here. But like we said, it did have a favorable word of mouth and did become a success on cable and video in the early 90s here. Leonardo DiCaprio has that brief cameo in this.
I saw his name in the credits and I was like, Leonardo DiCaprio as Guy? I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And I looked it up and it's like there's a screen cap of him. It's literally he's an extra.
Yeah.
He's walking out of the school. I'm like, how did he get billing like that when he is literally, he does not have a line, not even a close up. Mm-hmm. He's just one of many kids just wandering out of the school at some point.
Yeah, that is surprising.
How did he get star billing when he did nothing? Know. I'm fascinated. What is the story behind this?
Yeah.
This is odd. Because
he knew someone who knew someone else. Yeah.
Did he do like what show was
Critters 3 or
something? He had done that at this point. I think. And then was he on like Family Ties or Growing Pains or one of those
Growing
shows?
Growing Pains, I think. Yeah, Growing
Pains.
Had he
done that at this point? I don't know.
I can't remember. Yeah.
This is just very odd that he got like an actual credit when he's an extra.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? I was reading through this interview that Cache did also, and so there were a few interesting bits in here. So the interviewer asks, as I understand it, Poison Ivy is based on a true story, for which Cache says, correct, it's based on the experiences of Melissa Goddard, who was the executive producer. The story is true in spirit, not in actual fact. For example, her mother was sick like Georgie, but Ivy didn't actually kill her, and the real Ivy also didn't die in the end. Melissa and producer Peter Morgan were partners on it and brought it to New Line Cinema, and they handed it over to Andy and I. Originally, it was a Hollywood set story because Melissa's stepfather was a Hollywood producer, but we wanted to take it out of that realm because it made it kind of cheesy. We wanted to keep it real and have it be something relatable, which it wouldn't be in those Hollywood terms. Which, okay.
Doesn't this still take place in L.A.?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just not like not part like of the
true Hollywood
thing.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
He's just like, because what does Tom Skerritt do? It's like he's an anchor man on some TV station. Does he own the station? What's going on?
I can't figure it out. I get the feeling maybe he's like some sort of conservative pundit too.
I can't really put my finger on it. Fox News before Fox News, is it like some sort of like Rush Limbaugh takeoff or something?
Right.
I don't know,
because she calls him like an asshole
early
on in the movie, and that's why they do the bomb threat and stuff. So
I don't know, it's weird.
Hard to say. Another question here. The film came out in an interesting era for erotic thrillers. All of these were directed by men. Was there something you wanted to bring to the genre as a female filmmaker? To which Cache says, I never considered myself a female filmmaker, so I don't even know the answer to that question. That never even entered my mind. I did notice that everyone else was male. It was not hard to notice that, but I was very naive about it. After Poison Ivy, everybody in Hollywood knew my name, but I didn't work for 6 years, and it had to do with the fact that I was female. People said, we want to be in business with you, and then nothing came to fruition. It was so obvious and yet also so covert. At one point, my agent did tell me, male stars don't want to be directed by women. They love your work and they think you're fantastic, but they don't want to be directed by a woman.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. Fucked up. Yeah, that's partly why we're covering the movie this week. Yeah, this month, folks, because it's Women's History Month. And we're going to probably cover a couple movies directed / written by women here. So.
Yes, we are. So buckle up, buttercups. If you got a problem with it, you can suck it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. Good time.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
She said Drew Barrymore was the first choice for this. But they didn't even know if she was acting all that much anymore, probably for reasons like you already spelled out. Sarah Gilbert was also the first choice. And of course, she was doing Roseanne at the time. I guess Gilbert had some doubts about doing the role in general, but it all came together here. I mean, she doesn't have to do anything all that controversial in this movie, to be honest. Not it's mostly really. Barrymore who's, you know, doing the controversial stuff here.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess like the girl-girl kiss stuff, but it's
the kiss.
It's
there
honestly
is the kiss.
Kind of chased in a way, like especially these days. Yeah. I'm like, I feel like you'd see more intense stuff on like a Netflix show. You know, it's
right,
not
like, right.
Hell, like a Nickelodeon show is probably more, you know, wild these days than that. You know,
yeah. That's most of the stuff here. I guess, like I said, there were multiple ending shots, The interviewer asks her, do you wish that the character had survived at the end? And Katche says it's probably a good thing that she died because of the people that are kind of making her as a role model. But at the time, my take on it was that these people get away with it. This type of person gets away for a long time with this kind of stuff, which is true. I thought the movie should end with her hitchhiking and she gets picked up by another nice person and she's just going to do the same thing over and over and over again.
I feel like she could hitchhike to Vegas and become a showgirl.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Change her name to Nomi.
Nomi, exactly.
Maybe this is part of the canon. She just hitchhiked to Vegas, and that's her story.
Yeah.
After all, she's from feel like it's... different places, you know. We don't know what those different places are.
Yeah. It does feel like it could be part of that universe. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, there's just a certain vibe from this early 90s period. You know, it's just impossible to really put your finger on and describe. But like you said, the billowy curtains and I don't know. Like I said, just hard to describe. But
it's like a Pure Moods commercial. You know, it's like there's just this vibe of like calming sensuality and eroticism and like just magic. There's magic in the air. I don't know. It's weird.
Right. Totally. Okay. So what's going on?
Well, there's this girl, high schooler named Sylvie, and Sylvie likes to journal. She's kind of nerdy and keeps to herself and has no friends. But there's this new girl who she doesn't know her name. All she knows is that she likes to swing a lot on this little rope swing over like this huge canyon thing, and and which does not seem safe, and but that's because she's this rebellious wild child, and of course Sylvie's drawn to that quality. She's like, who is this girl? She looks so slutty, but I like it. Am I a lesbian? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. Who can tell? And so she becomes kind of obsessed with this girl, and they are both like kind of troublemakers. Like they sort of have their first real conversation when they're both coming out of the principal's office. Sylvie, because she called in a bomb threat to her father's TV station because she doesn't like the way that her father talks on the air and doesn't stand for the things that he stands for. And her mom is very sick with emphysema, but she still smokes, which doesn't seem like the smartest choice. But, you know, you do you, boo. And
it seems like she's got more going on than emphysema too. There's
there's a lot
of things going on there.
Yeah, it's like I don't really think her mother and father have a conversation for like until like the middle of the movie. Like they're never in the same room, so you just wonder like what's going on here. Like there's some friction, some family friction. Well,
They're in the same room for one scene, which we'll get to. But
yes, for a very important scene, and a scene with dancing, and so yeah, like Sylvie just kind of takes this girl in, and at some point, her dad comes to pick her up, and her new friend doesn't have a ride, and she's like, "Hey, can I ride with y'all?" And so she persuades her dad to let her ride with them, and immediately this girl is like calling the shots. She's like, "I get car sick. Can you sit in the back, Sylvie? I'm gonna sit in the front." And also she doesn't know her name, so she just sees a tattoo on her leg of Ivy and is like, "Oh, this dad, this is Ivy. That's her name. Yes, that's what we're gonna call her." So red flag. Let's plant that in the ground and come back to it. Clearly the dad on the way. The way back home is like kind of checking her out because she's just like taking off her boots and like putting her legs up on the dashboard and stuff, and you're like, oh, this is gonna go into some shady places. And she also has mentioned to Sylvie that she thinks Sylvie's dad's an asshole as well. And so they get home, and Ivy's like telling her all these things about how, like, you know, she doesn't really have any family and she lives with her aunt who just wants her there because she gets a check every month. And she doesn't really tell her anything about her life or where she came from. She's very mysterious. You never know her real name. And Sylvie's like, she keeps to herself, but she's a good girl in the sense that she volunteers to teach these privileged kids when she can, you know. So she's got some high aspirations, and they go to their house and they meet Sylvie's mom, and her mom is like immediately like, this girl is trashy, what is she doing here and stuff. And so Ivy kind of feels like she doesn't really belong there, but then she sort of weasels her way back in by kind of explaining to Sylvie's mom like all the bad things that happened to her, and so it kind of like warms her up to her. And then pretty soon Ivy just starts living there and becoming a bad influence. Like they go off and they get tattoos together with this really sleazy tattoo artist, and they lie and say that they're like in their 20s, but of course Ivy's like, Sylvie's 30. And it's just, you know, there's some bad influencing going on. And eventually, like, I think during that scene, it kind of comes out that Sylvie might think that Ivy's a little trashy, and Ivy gets pissed off because she's like, "Oh, I'm like one of your inner city, you know, poor people projects. Like, fuck you." And then Sylvie leaves, or almost leaves, and then she's like, "Never mind, I'm gonna come back." And she's like, "Just kidding." And you're like, "Sylvie, girl, like, just have a backbone." And this whole time, like, Sylvie is still like really uptight and repressed. Like, she refuses to go so swinging on the very unsafe rope swing, which I don't blame her for. That looks like an easy way to die, you know. And she's always coming in, and like, her mom is contemplating jumping off of her balcony all the time as she plays her like recital music and stuff. It's very overdramatic. And then there's like this big party that the dad is putting on for something. I don't know if he's like, I'm not sure why he's throwing a party. It's not like a retirement party, is it?
I think it's his birthday.
It's just a birthday,
because I remember her looking at the calendar and manipulating that, and I think it said like dad's birthday or something on it.
Yeah, because Ivy intercepts a call from the guy in charge of Sylvie's inner city children learning program. And she's and he's all like, hey, can Sylvie do this date? And she's like, absolutely. She's got nothing planned, even though it's the day of her dad's party.
And yeah, some kind of party. Yeah. Yeah.
So she plans this whole thing. And on the day of the party, you know, she's Sylvie's, I guess, co-teacher shows up and is like, hey, are you ready to go? And she's like, I'm dressed for this party that I'm supposed to help out with. And he's like, what the hell? And Ivy's like, oh, I'm so stupid. I should have told you. I thought you were free. I got confused. But it's cool. You go and do that and I'll help. I'll dress up and I'll, you know, point the guests to where they need to be and stuff. And she finds a dress that belongs to Sylvie's mother and dresses up. And she's a big hit at the party. Everyone's like, oh, wow. You're so stunning, Ivy. You look beautiful. And Sylvie's dad really notices how lovely she is. And he has a thing where he's not an alcoholic. He just has a problem with drinking. So he doesn't, he sneaks drinks a lot. Yeah. And no one's supposed to know. And he gets kind of hammered at this party. And after everyone's gone, Ivy's like, dancing by herself, and he shows up, and he's had a few to drink, and in fact she's like given him drinks at some point, and they start dancing, and it's taking a turn in the kitchen, and then who walks in but Sylvie's mom. And she's not happy. She's like, what are you doing? And they basically just like take her to her room and give her pills and champagne until she passes out, and she smashes a glass, and then they just start like making out like on her bed as she's asleep, which seems a little bit risky, but you know, they've been drinking. So, I mean, you know,
yeah,
they don't even think about that. And so, yeah, now the seeds have been planted for a little affair to remember between Ivy, if that is in fact her real name, and the father. And Sylvie comes back and she starts noticing that nobody really pays attention to her anymore. In fact, even her dog is not a fan of hers anymore. He's spending more time with Ivy because Ivy keeps treats hidden in her pockets. So the little fucker wants to be with her, obviously, because you know she's got the treats, and she's got the treats. She's eyeing this sports car that Sylvie's mom owned for a long time, but she can't drive it anymore. And she always said she wanted a sports car at some point, so she's just like, you know, looking at that. And at some point, Sylvie finds her in there, and she's like, "That's my mom's car. Get out!" And then she's all like, you've taken my dog, you bitch, and stuff. And like, and there's like a whole scene where she's like, they have the dog and they're trying to figure out who the dog is going to come to first. She's all like, come to me. And it's like, no, you come to me. It's like, and the poor dog is like, I just, who's got the treats? That's what I want to know. Yeah. That's all I care about. Give me the treats. And then she's like, she says something about her. Sylvie says something about Ivy's skirt, and she's like, fine, you take it. And she just takes off her skirt in the middle of the day, broad daylight, and just walks off with her ass just hanging out. And you're like, what's that about? And Sylvie's mom is still practicing her suicide. And one day, Ivy walks in, and she's all like, oh, look at you. You're just hanging out here, listening to your daughter's piano recital, and like, have you ever thought about what would happen if you jumped? And she's like, yeah, I have. And then she just shoves her off the balcony unprovoked.
It's literally out of nowhere.
This movie takes a turn so fucking quick.
Yeah.
Like, Ivy at this point seems like she's manipulative, you know, she's cunning, but you don't really think of her as a murderer. Like, she doesn't have like a murderous feeling to her, but she just I think she's just really bored. I don't know. She's just like, I guess I'll just kill her. I don't know. I had nothing else to do today.
And it's shot like kind of surreal. So at first you're like, did this really happen? Or is it like a dream or something?
Yeah.
And, but And then just like immediately, well, she like hides behind the window there, immediately the funeral, and it's like, yeah, did this
she's
really
dead.
Happen? Yeah, I guess it happened because
she's
dead.
She is dead. And she wastes no time in like, you know, sort of maneuvering herself even further into the family. And the dad is really happy to have her around for sexual healing. And and then, like, I'm trying... God, where does this movie go now? I can't even remember. It's like there's...
It meanders a bit here.
It
yeah.
does a bit. And it's just yeah. a lot of, like, fighting about, like, stop taking my family away from me and stuff. And then eventually, like, at some point, they clean up the car. And Ivy convinces Sylvie to go for a drive. And she's like, you're driving too fast. Stop doing this. And Ivy starts to hum a song in the car. And she's like, how do you know that song? That's my piano recital song. My mom was listening to that the day she died. How do you... You were there. What did she say? And she's like, nothing. She didn't really say anything. And she's like, but she was going to kill herself. So she must have said something like, you know, hi-ho, here I come or something. Like she, but she didn't, of course. And and so then... he's like, stop asking me questions. You're stressing me out. And they're driving on this like windy road, and she doesn't know how to shift the gear. So it's not going to end well. And eventually they almost hit this car, and they swerve and they hit a tree. And Sylvie's head like goes through the fucking windshield.
I also had to replay this because like Drew's boobs just like bounce against the steering wheel.
The close-up of the boobs on the steering wheel. And
I had to play it back like twice because I was like, did that just happen?
They leave this huge mark on her boobs, and she's like, oh no, I can't do this. I'm gonna have to switch places with Sylvie to make it look like she was driving the car, and then I'm just gonna run away and go get help. And so now everybody thinks that Sylvie's crazy and that she was the one driving the car. And so she's in the hospital.
Her head went through the passenger side.
And I mean, you know, like, there's blood. It does look like she's injured. But I think for as intense of a smash as it looked like, I don't know how she's alive.
Yeah,
I feel like they might have overdone the smash. It's almost like they originally shot it to where her character was supposed to die here, and then they were like, let's go back in and just change the last act of the movie because, you know, I don't know.
Well, Roger Corman didn't like it. Showed up on set that day, and you know, Roger was like, yeah, we need to
more excitement
here, and we need some more excitement.
It's so ridiculous. And so now the dad's like, so you're telling me that Ivy was the one driving that? I don't believe you. Stay in the hospital and rot. And he just like leaves, just leaves her there. And she's like, I've got to leave and save my dad. So she's like sneaking around trying to get out of the hospital, still in her gown and stuff. And she sneaks into an elevator and escapes through the basement. But they don't want you to see that in the R-rated version. That was too intense.
No, too much.
You
too
can't
much.
You can only catch that in the unrated version. There's there's two gripping, highly offensive shots of her running through the hospital basement.
You can barely see it, but it's there.
Very hard to tell where she is. Is she in a Hellraiser movie? Who can tell? Running and she gets out and it's raining. And this very nice goth guy in a van just picks her up and is like, cool costume, hop in.
The side characters in this movie. You got the tattoo artist and you got this guy. It's like, I think that's what kind of makes it feel David Lynchian to me too. Just
absolutely.
These really weird, quirky characters in this really surreal setting. It's
great.
Weird.
I wonder what his story is. Like, why did he not come back for the sequels? Or does he? Maybe he does. I just don't know. Maybe part four is all about his personal journey, and that's going to be
Let
the
us
one
know.
That's
sure.
going to do it for me.
I'm sure we have at least a couple Poison Ivy enthusiasts on this.
Actually, he does make cameos in all of the films. You just have to look for it very carefully. If you pause it 1 hour and 11 minutes, 3 seconds, you can see him in part three. He's right there.
He actually does attend the Poison Ivy fan conventions, but only ever either year because he's so popular and he can only really, you know, handle it.
He does clowning for the children on the days where he's not conventioning. If that's a word, is that even a word?
Convention. Well, yeah, why not?
It should
not?
Be.
Yeah, convention.
It sounds good. I don't know. It is now. But so Sylvie hitches a ride and comes back in the pouring rain. It's raining so much in this movie. Yeah. And I forgot to mention there was a whole scene with like Ivy and the dad like fucking in the rain on like a car. But, you know, it's of course they did. And and so she comes back home and then she walks in and like immediately, first of all, the dog has been left out in the rain. I have a problem with that.
Oh,
fuck you, Ivy. You just wanted that dog so badly. She was like, I've never had a dog of my own. I just really wanted to like to pretend like I had one. And then she leaves it in the rain. Fuck you. Fuck you. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. And so she walks in, brings the poor wet dog in. And the first thing she sees is her dad fucking Ivy from behind, completely naked on a piano.
On the piano.
So it's like, right, welcome home.
If you don't watch the unrated version or whatever, you won't see this. But yeah,
you can't tell a lot from the R.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just kind of turn and they're like, oh, you're back. Okay, cool. And so Sylvie runs out into the rain again and they try to catch her and the dad slips and he's like, oh, my back. I'm 70 years old. I can't, you know. And Ivy's all like, just stay here. You're worthless. I'm going to go find her. And so eventually, like, somehow she ends up, Ivy ends up in the mother's room. And she's dressed in like the nightgown and stuff. And Sylvie is having hallucinations because of her brain damage. And so she thinks it's
again,
her mom.
It's like all surreal again. And yeah.
Because she also had a moment where she saw her mom in the hospital room and she was like talking to her. And so.
Well, and she pictured. Did you say like when she saw them fucking, like she pictured her mom?
Yeah, like she kind of pictures too. that too.
Yeah.
She's just sort of seen her mom everywhere. And so now I guess she thinks that Ivy is her mom. And so she goes up to her mom's room and she sees Ivy on the balcony and she's talking to her like she's her mom. And she's all like, the thing I want to tell you most is I love you. And then she realizes that she's just seen her mom and she's not there. And it's just Ivy. And she's like, you bitch, you killed her. Ah. And they have like a little fight. And then Ivy falls off the balcony, but she's holding on to this necklace that I guess her mom gave her, but the necklace isn't that sturdy, so it breaks, and then she just falls down and goes smack, and then the dad pulls up in his car and is just like, oh no, who's gonna clean this up? Who's gonna do this? Because they do have a maid, but the maid, we never mentioned the maid, but it seems like she hates everybody in that fucking family. Like she is,
which who can blame her?
So mad. She's like, why the fuck am I here? What, like, there's a whole scene where Sylvie's trying to make, like, espresso or something? And the machine explodes, and there's, like, coffee grinds everywhere, and she just looks up, and she's like, motherfucker, I gotta clean this up, too. Like, she's having it. Like, this, like you said, the supporting characters in this are a breed of their own. It's wonderful.
Right.
Everyone has a personality. And so Ivy just falls to her death, and then there's like narration from Sylvie that's just like, she died. Sometimes like I wonder like what was her story? Why was she like this? But she's dead. Go home. The movie's over. We'll never know.
It's pretty abrupt. I can definitely see how there were like four endings because like this one's kind of just like, okay, maybe take three or four, you know, like, I'm just going to end this thing. Yeah.
It sort of reminded me of The Good Son at the end where it's,
I was going to say The Good Son with the narration.
Like,
yeah.
He died. Was, yeah. We're better off.
The end.
Here I am on a mountain. I don't know why.
On a cliff somewhere.
On a cliff just hanging out. I kind of wish the end of the film was just Sylvie on the rope swing, just like,
right.
She's dead.
Yeah, where are these alternate endings? I think they were shot. So
I'd love to see them.
Some of them, hopefully. I would love to see them if they were. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Scream Factory? Where are they on the Blu-ray?
Come on. Mm-hmm.
That's what always weirds me out about when people put out movies on Blu-ray and stuff. And sometimes these movies are stacked with, you know, deleted scenes and making of stuff and commentaries. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they're like, we have some production notes. And you're like, what? That's it? Like, we also have a theatrical trailer. Like, what is that? What is this, 1999? Come on, step up to the plate.
I'm kind of worried about the faculty, you know, that's coming out here on 4K, thankfully, finally. But, like, we'll see what they finally, what they manage to get on that disc.
Yeah, I really hope, like, they get everyone back together to talk about it.
You can't get Piper Laura anymore, sadly, because they waited too long. But everyone else,
I think everyone's still kicking for the most part. And I bet they had a good time on the movie. They should all want to come back and talk about it.
They should.
And I want to see some of those deleted scenes, too.
Yeah, yeah.
We know they exist.
Jon Stewart, he's Jon Stewart's still out there. He'll come back. He'll talk about it, you know.
He just started the Daily Show again. He's got time.
It's good, actually. I've been watching him back on there, and it's been enjoying it.
I haven't watched it yet. That is good to know.
It is solid.
Yeah, this is a very interesting film. It's
yeah.
I think it could stand to be a little sleazier, I think, actually.
I think so.
It's a little classy.
It is classy, and, like, you know, I appreciate her kind of wanting to move past her Corman days a little bit and try something a little more classy-ish. But yeah, I agree. I think it could go a little bit further. I like that Ivy's character, for part of the runtime at least, is somewhat relatable here, and it's like, okay, Sylvie is sort of she's the protagonist, but at the same time it's like she's rich and she's kind of well off, and you kind of see how that interaction between her and Ivy, and like how they kind of want to be friends, but they're also from different backgrounds, and how that impacts the friendship and everything too. And
exactly,
so that's interesting. And
I mean, when you think about it, this movie actually has a lot in common with Saltburn.
Totally.
Actually,
yeah.
I mean, it has a very similar story about, you know, the sort of, this is in quotations, because if you've seen Saltburn, but the sort of poor kid who is trying to infiltrate this family that's rich and, you know, all that stuff. There's many deaths and seductions and stuff like that.
The whole family and everything. Yeah, absolutely. You can see the influences for sure.
But yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time.
It was nice to revisit, like
with The Crush. Those were on TBS, I swear, every weekend, constantly. They were always on. I think because, like, they're erotic thrillers, but there's not that much to really clean up. Like, they're not that explicit. So there's they can still kind of play on TV without too much being cut out.
Mm-hmm. This one's almost more of a teen melodrama for, like, part of the runtime, and kind of goes into, like, erotic thriller territory, and it gives you a little bit of everything, which we like. Those movies that give you a taste of this and a taste of this and everything.
It's like a little golden corral, you know. You can get a little bit of pizza and then some shrimp and maybe some steak.
Maybe.
Mix it up.
And maybe it's been sitting there for 5 weeks. Who knows? But we're going to try it.
Does it matter? It's still delicious. It's still yummy. It can be reheated 15 times, but hey.
You're going to regret it tomorrow, but who cares?
You sure are. Your stomach's going to hate you. You only live once. So at the time, it's like, this is home cooking. That's what I love about those kinds of movies. It's like, you don't have to just settle on one thing. I hate when people are like, you have to pick one genre for your film, or else people will get confused and say, what kind of a movie is this? I'm like, like, if the tonal shifts are completely out of left field, like if you're watching a rom-com and then 50 minutes in it turns into a zombie apocalypse film, maybe that's a little, you don't really build to that could be a little odd. But, you know, if you mix it just well enough, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful.
Like a
mixed genre piece.
Yeah, totally. And like you said, it's a stylized movie. It's
It's pretty.
It's pretty, and it has its own, like, distinct kind of pacing, and like I said, a little surreal at times, especially when she has, like, the concussion at the end and you don't know what the hell's going on, which is kind of a smart, like, move in terms of, like, okay, like, that's why she's seeing these things, because she just had a fucking concussion and her head just went through a goddamn window.
Like, brutally. I mean, that shot of the head going through the windshield. Like, how is she alive? That looks horrible. I mean, her whole face should be drenched in blood, not just that one little side. It should be covered. There's no way.
I guess it's good she had a seatbelt on, or she would have been flying through the air like a goddamn lawn dart. Good stuff. Good stuff. Maybe she moved to Mount Rose after this.
Maybe and did she the, did. You know,
the Mount Rose beauty pageant.
She works for St. Paul Port Products. She liked him so much. She works here now.
She works here now.
There's the sequel that we need. Like, bring back Sarah Gilbert. Like, have her take some time off from the Connors, you know, and just...
Yeah, she'll do it.
See where Sylvie is now.
Yeah.
Where is Sylvie? Does she still have the head trauma? I mean, is she like...
Yeah. You know? I think Ivy could have survived that fall. You know, why not?
You know, weirder things have happened in the world of motion pictures.
If she can survive that fucking car crash, then, then Ivy can survive.
Maybe her tits broke that fall too. I don't know. Maybe so. Just bounced right back up.
Like, I think Stu from Scream should show up because everybody knows he's not dead.
I mean, yeah, he's going to have a TV on his head, but I think that could be like a really cool new ghost face mask, like TV head ghost face. It'd be really cool. There was Uber Jason. Everybody loved that. We can have Stu TV head ghost face, man.
Yeah, you can have a little Pop Funko character with his like, giant TV on his head.
I'm just trying to picture like an opening scene, Sydney. Gets a call and it's like, hey Sydney, it's me. And she's like, I've heard this before, this is stupid. He's like, you haven't heard it like this before. She runs by a window and there's Stu just with a TV on his head watching her. He's like, remember me, Sydney?
And maybe it can be like a thing where he has kind of fixed the TV so it kind of works, so he can like talk to people using like characters on the screen. Like, hi, this is Linda Alcott with the 7 o'clock news, and it's time to die, Sydney.
It's me, Suzanne Summers. Are you looking? are you embarrassed by your thighs? I've got the thing for you.
It's time to die.
Oh, that would be great. Why the fuck not? Why not? At this point, I mean, Jesus.
The franchise is basically dead. So,
where's
you know,
it gonna go?
Where's it gonna go?
Just
you know?
Gonna reboot from scratch again. I'm sure at this point. So why not give give those crazy fans what they want?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing with these like sequels now is that they so many of them have just rebooted from scratch at this point that I'm like, you really can do anything, and then just 5 years down the road, be like, yeah, remember that? We're not gonna do that. We're going to pretend like that never happened. We're going to start from the first one again and just rebuild. Right. So, but, like, there's no stakes anymore.
While it's happening, we're going to pretend like these are the real sequels.
These are the best ones.
These are the ones that count.
The
nothing,
ones
nothing
that
else
came
matters.
Before, that was trash.
You know what I mean? And, I mean, that was the end of the franchise.
That was the
know?
True
it's
ending.
It's over. It's
that
the
was
true
the
ending.
One. There will
know?
Never be another one ever again. Okay, he is dead. He is in a whatever the fuck that was, like a trash compactor. What was that thing he was in? I don't know. I'll give them that much. It's a good way to kill him. But good Lord, he's coming back. Okay, we all know that. Because 10 years from now, if even that, they'll be like, well, remember those? You don't need to. You don't, because we have the true sequel. The true sequel.
Jamie Lee Curtis is like, well, I know I produced it and everything, but it was shit, really. You know, I totally disown that. And these new ones, these are the ones you have to watch, y'all, okay?
This is the one where we're going to try something new. Laurie is a teacher, and we've never done that before, ever. And she eats Activia, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go with it. I don't even care. Isn't that sad? I just don't care anymore. Because I'm like, you know, whatever it is, even if it sucks, they can always just say, bloop, it never happened.
It never happened, yeah.
It's like those remakes. I'm like, it doesn't really make the original any better or worse. It's, you know, it's just, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does work, hey, it's a good companion piece.
Yeah. And studios are, they're too reliant on, like, fan input in general these days, where, like, even if they make something that's kind of interesting, if there's a blowback to it, people are like, you know, the filmmakers are like, I guess we have to go a different direction because enough of these angry fans threw a fit about it. It was the same with the I mean, I know you're not a huge Star Wars person, but like the new Star Wars movies, they were like the second one in this new trilogy that Disney did was actually kind of interesting, and they were like, hey, let's do something different, and people fucking lost their minds. Yep. And then the third one was terrible because mm-hmm. they had felt like they had to go back and like tie it back to the original trilogy and all this other shit, and exactly. it was like, oh my god, this is why we can't have nice things, because people fucking ruin it. And it's always the people that are the loudest on social media and stuff.
Of course. I think so many of these fans are very superficial in the sense that if it looks and sounds like their beloved classic, that's enough. That's enough. They're like, oh, good. They got that. They got the superficial stuff right. But they don't get the actual story stuff right. They don't get what made the story interesting in the first place. Like Michael Myers. If you make a movie and Michael Myers is your leading man, he's the main character, you have failed. Because Michael Myers is the single most boring character ever created. He is a nothing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing going on there. That's the point. That's why he was scary in the first one. He's a blank slate.
He's the embodiment of death. Yeah. There's nothing to this character. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And it's like when they start to think, oh, I know what the Halloween fans want. They just want Michael Myers killing a bunch of people. So they make, you know, a Halloween Ends. Halloween Kills. I get him confused. And it's just him killing people. There's no plot.
Yeah, that's all it is.
No character. Just bam, 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 bam. And some people genuinely were like, that's the best one I've ever seen, because it's just what I want. Michael Myers killing on Halloween. That's all a Halloween film should be. I'm like, yeah, that needs to be a part of it. But you also have to have characters that are interesting to watch when he's not killing.
Right.
Because he's boring. Yeah. He does the same thing in every scene. Kills. That's all he does.
Same with Jason.
Yeah, they're boring. Yeah,
it's boring. Yeah.
At least Freddy's got some jokes, you know?
Freddy's got some jokes. I mean, Chucky's fun sometimes.
He's got the good jokes too.
You know, he's got the fun family and stuff. So there's
Leprechaun that goes to Vegas. I mean, come on.
Leprechaun does go to Vegas. Yeah. But I'm not really excited about any of the franchises right now.
No.
It is what it is. I mean, the rest of the child's Chucky season's coming out. So I want to see that.
That'll be great.
I know John Waters. I haven't watched any of season three because I was waiting for the rest of it to air, so we'll see. I know John Waters plays like the head of the factory, I guess, that created the doll. So that's the good guy doll. So that's fun.
I love that so much.
Who may or may not be making a new movie? Apparently, have you seen all that? Like,
he said it still hasn't gotten a budget yet, and they don't have a shoot date. And Aubrey Plaza might be playing the part, but they're not sure. I don't know. I don't know. I want it all to be true. Because I feel like,
and maybe talking about it will make it real, so maybe it'll be worthwhile. Just like, you know, but
I think it'll be great. I feel like he and Aubrey will be a really good team.
Oh yeah,
I
could see that perfect pairing for
really
sure.
Being great.
Yeah,
so I'm all for it. I can't wait.
Make it interesting happen, to everyone. See, like, because he hasn't made a movie in like what 20 years now.
Yeah, since, last one was Dirty Shame,
2004.
Yeah,
Dirty Shame. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see just how his aesthetic has sort of shifted. You know?
Like, I can't imagine this will be the first one he shot digitally, I guess. I feel like it's going to be a whole different ball game, and it's sort of like, and he's even talked about this before, where like he feels like his style is no longer kind of counterculture and sort of underground. It's become kind of more mainstream, and so he's kind of like, you know, am I really the sort of underground kind of filmmaker now, and this kind of stuff has become so much more sort of typical now, but no one can do it quite like him, so I don't think it's really going to be that much of a problem.
Yeah, I think it became more sort of mainstream in like the 90s and maybe like early 2000s, but now, like we said, it's almost like we've gone backwards and everything's very conservative again, and now we kind of need something that's going to like break the mold, and
I think it's the right
time,
get
people out of there.
We had Saltburn to kind of plant those seeds. Now we just need more to step up to the plate and keep on going.
For sure.
America sexy again.
Sexy. That's all we want, folks. Come on.
That would be the platform I would run on.
Yeah.
Throw my hat in the ring.
Maybe they'll start making erotic thrillers on OnlyFans. There we go.
They could, you know. I mean, that would be good.
They could.
You wouldn't have to censor anything. They could be like super erotic. I've always thought the person who could make a really good porno with a plot and people who can act would become a billionaire. if you could merge like have it be really explicit, like genuine porn, but with people who can act, and it's well shot, and it's, you know, oh my God.
I mean, yeah, back in the 70s, you know, you had some of those that were porn, essentially, that became these big hits and stuff, like Deep Throat.
Deep Throat was huge. But,
yeah, so and it'd be interesting to see.
They went to see that in the theater, in a packed house. Yeah. Like, these conservative fucking 78-year-olds were going to see Deep Throat. What was going on at that time? We need to get back to that. Whatever was going on would be nice.
There was something in the water. Yeah,
that's crazy to think of. I can't imagine that now. There's no way in hell.
No, the late 70s, I mean, the mid to late 70s, so like freewheeling in general, the drugs and the sex and everything. It was
just, how could that even happen? It's now? Crazy. I just to get like these conservative, prudish types in a theater to see a movie like Deep Throat.
It's crazy.
They won't even go see Saltburn, you know? Like, we can't.
No.
Like, how would this happen? I just find that so cool that that was a thing. Somehow a porno was like a big box office hit.
Right. Yeah, it's the problem now is like, well, you know, we talk about polarization and everything, but it's like the conservatives don't like the sex because, of course, they're conservative. They never really like the sex all that much. Oh, yeah, but like you said, sometimes they were more open to it in the past. Mm-hmm. And now the liberals don't like the sex because it's exploitative. And like, we can't, you know, exploit these women. And, you know, it's so now we just can't have sex at all because both groups have decided that sex is bad. And
exactly.
Like, this is ridiculous.
And neither of them can see that they're exactly the same on this. And they just don't get it. Like, they're both acting like, you know, Puritans.
Anytime liberals and conservatives agree on something, that's usually not like the greatest.
Oh, it's horrible. You know, it's terrible. Know. It's so bad. I'm like, oh, are we really going to come together over this? Wow, that's not that's not good. Mm-hmm. That's so bad. Yeah. Oh, it's such a shame. God, y'all just need to watch Poison Ivy. Just watch it and get your
just put it on. You know.
I was gonna say take the sticks out of your ass, but I say put some up there and see how it feels for a bit, and maybe you'll loosen up. I don't know.
Leave it there for a while.
Just leave it. Plug it up. Plug it up. Plug it up.
You know, it was either a missed opportunity or a great decision. The fact that they did not use the that Poison song from the early 90s, the Bill Bev DeVoe song that was like, girl is poison.
I mean, they probably couldn't afford the rights. I don't know.
Probably. Yeah.
There's, you know, it's because this was probably a very low budget film for New Line. I mean, because there's probably like maybe three main locations. It's not a. Mm-hmm. It in some ways it still feels like a Roger Corman film because of the way it's planned out in terms of that. You know, just it feels.
Yeah.
Like, they thought, okay, we've got a few locations, a few actors. We can make this for, like, $3. It'll be great.
Right, yeah. Yeah, let's see what the budget's only, like, $1.8 million. So No, $3 million, but still, it's not a ton. But
I mean, that's chump change. They just had killed off Freddy. They were probably raking in the dough from that.
They were riding high here,
Oh, New Line. Remember when they would take a bunch of risks, you know?
Yeah.
Now they don't.
Good times.
Because they're owned by Time Warner. They're like, how dare you take a risk?
Yeah.
It's a shame. Oh, God. They were a good company back in the day. They really... they got shit done.
Mm-hmm.
Produced our beloved Drop Dead Gorgeous. Come on. Ugh. Didn't know how to market it, but hey, that's you know. That's,
well, yeah.
How do you
who would really, but
market a film so perfect? You just can't.
Right.
You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah. How do you market a film like Drop Dead Gorgeous? How do you hold a moonbeam in your hand?
What a flibberty gibbet.
We are meandering as we tend to do, as this movie
Us?
Does a bit.
Really?
And yeah.
Says who?
Do you have an overlooked gem for today? Because I do not.
I do. I watched a movie everyone was raving about. It's called Cobweb. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this?
Yeah, it's cute.
It's not bad. It's not bad. You know, there's some questions that I have towards the last act of the film, but I don't want to get into that because it's very spoily.
Right. It goes a little like malignant in the end,
does.
Where things just go like fucking nuts at the end.
It does, and I appreciated it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it starts off as one movie and turns into another and then turns into another, and it's like, mm-hmm. this is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a nice, crisp, under 90-minute film. It is about a young kid who has moved into a new home with his parents, and he's having a hard time adjusting to school and his new life, and he starts to hear these strange sounds in his bedroom in the walls, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. these sounds turn into an actual voice talking to him. There's like someone in the wall that's like, hey, mm-hmm. your parents are kind of scary, like what's going
Love
on
a wall
here?
Person
yeah
Love a wall person.
And his parents are acting really weird, like it kind of reminded me of the movie Parents a bit for like the first
parents, mm-hmm.
half, because
totally.
The parents are definitely weird, sure. you know, there's something they're hiding and you're like, what is right. this gonna be? And right. I'm not gonna spoil it because there's some really good surprises here. It's right. Great
Lizzie
cast.
Kaplan's
Lizzie
some,
Kaplan's
yeah,
wonderful.
And, stuff, yeah.
and it is very moody. It takes place around Halloween. So there's lots of, you know, great mm-hmm. mood. And I think some people were complaining that they had released this in like the summer, I think, last year.
Yeah, it was. And well, it they released it right around when the Barbenheimer stuff was
right,
going on, which was just
right.
fucking stupid.
Because it played for a week.
Yeah,
it literally
was,
played for a week.
Yeah, it
was gone.
A lot of people slept on this one, I think, and it's definitely worth checking out. Yeah,
yeah, it's got a nice autumny, Halloween-y kind of a feel, and that's really all I want to say about it. It's kind of like for the first part of the movie, I was like, this is PG-13, right? And then by the end, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, no, this is R, okay. But it sort of feels like a Goosebumps episode or something mm-hmm. in a good way. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it goes like full on crazy, like people under the stairs, like just
very
weird shit.
Nitty.
And
it's
great. It's wonderful.
Uh-huh. Some kind of like The Grudge type stuff.
It
too.
Did remind me of The Grudge. I was like, wow, are those characters back now? Like those kind
it
of long haired creepers.
That's another one that turning 20 years old this year, at least
oh
the American
God.
Remake anyway, so yeah.
I haven't seen that in so long. Oh.
Maybe we should dig that one up at some point this
year.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
20th anniversary.
I haven't
anniversary,
seen it in so
yeah.
long. I remember liking it.
Yeah. It was right. I remember I like the Japanese version better, but that's for most movies. Except The Ring. I actually like the American one better, but there you go.
Yeah, I always feel such guilt about saying I like the American Ring more than Ringu.
I
can't understand what like, and there's stuff that I like in Ring You. I think the climactic coming out of the TV scene is done much better in that one. It's not as CG,
the CGI stuff.
And stuff.
That's about the only thing that hasn't aged the best in the Ring.
That's
really
true.
Is the CGI stuff, but everything else is fantastic. And I think
I liked it more.
We're not talking about Ringu. Why are we talking about Ringu?
I don't know. Why do we do this, Kevin? Why are we... Right. Why?
We did a whole episode on The Ring.
God damn
it. Listen to our episode. You want to hear us talk about
it? Yes. Cobweb. Good movie. It's on Hulu
Cobweb,
at the moment.
Cobweb.
Go,
good stuff.
Go see
good
it.
Stuff. Nice. Nice. Nice.
Check it out.
Yeah, we'll be back probably next week with another female... created film.
Yeah.
We'll see what that'll be. But
what do you think it is?
I don't know. I don't think we even know, so we'll
we
figure it out
know.
After
we
done
know
recording.
Anything. We don't we don't know
you
who
we
are.
Shit, folks?
Gosh. Thank you for listening to our ramblings. We appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, thank you as always. Happy almost spring. It was like the mildest winter ever, so well.
Yeah, it lasted
for
2 days.
Yeah, things happened. Yeah.
It's nothing.
I guess a snowstorm or something could still happen. You never fucking know climate change here, but we'll see.
That's true. Yeah.
But,
it's already heating up here. I'm like, motherfucker.
Yeah,
I had
so many
cute winter clothes. I can't wear them.
I know. I had all these sweaters that I barely had a chance to wear. Yeah.
I know. What's that about? It's upsetting.
Yeah.
I like cold weather clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, take it easy, everyone. And, you know, it's in the words of a, you know, a great human being, you know, fuck you with a limp dick, you know?
Is that the words of our dear Ivy?
I believe so. But
it
she
is.
Says it lovingly. So
she does.
As do I.
With
you know?
Love. With love.
No scorn in that.
Limp dick fuckage with love. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we preach here at Haunted Hill.
Okay, well, goodbye, everyone.
Peace out, y'all.